The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
Here's the idea for the next 10 pods. We can do Paddy's little holiday review. 40 minutes of review.
Like Catherine Thomas here, no frontiers.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
I'm delighted to say Ciara McCormack is with us, who's a former Republic of Ireland international, who was involved in helping to bring forward the stories that have ultimately led this weekend to the fixtures in the NWSL. That's the Women's Soccer League in America being suspended following investigation into allegations of impropriety on the part of a coach. Ciara, good morning to you. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I don't want to overplay your role in this, but actually it is quite important in terms of creating a culture where people were allowed to come forward, where stories were being believed, where a voice was given to people who had something happen to them that was completely off the scale in terms of what you would expect a safe environment around practicing sport and playing sport was to be. This is the story that broke at the weekend, obviously, is hugely important and hopefully is a tipping point. But from your perspective, it rang a lot of bells from your own story from a decade ago.
Yeah, that's really nice of you to say. I think, you know, even for me, other people that have come, you know, that came before me in other sports, I think it's good when it like these things start to get some light shone on it. What did you ask?
Well, essentially that the story at the weekend wasn't a million miles away from your own story, and that
right. Sorry. It definitely for sure was triggering. And again, just because these things have such a pattern, you know, just everything from the power that the coaches had and how that affected the abuse that happened to, you know, going to management to tell management what had happened and sort of a quick internal investigation. And then the, you know, coach getting fired and having that kind of put under the rug and then, you know, dealing with it for 5 years to try to, you know, come forward. In our case, it was like 11 years. I can imagine those players too. You sort of think you're crazy because you're telling people and no one's reacting. And then, you know, then there's like the explosion like there was this past weekend with the NWSL. So yeah, there was a lot of similarities for sure with both cases.
When you look at the NWSL story, how big a moment is this in terms of getting over the line, in terms of actually being able to speak out, and in terms of, I guess, heads rolling to a certain point at executive level in the NWSL? I know your own experience has come from time in Canada, obviously. There seems to be a hell of a lot of similarities here where a lot of complaints have been made down through the years, but it's actually not just getting over the bravery of those complaints. It is actually hoping that those complaints lead to something. From the outside looking in, this feels a little bit different and it feels a little bit more significant. Is that what you're thinking as well?
It's funny. I feel like I'm a little bit jaded sort of from just being in this space for so long. And I think, for sure it's the US. And I think just the magnitude, of sort of, it does feel different. I think that's a really good way to say it. I think the fact that they have just announced the former U.S. Attorney General that's going to be investigating, I think a huge part of these things is that normally the clubs are allowed to self-investigate. And what always happens is essentially it's a PR job, you know, wrapped up in a quote unquote investigation. So from that standpoint, if there is actually transparency, which it sounds like there will be hopefully from this Attorney General that they've hired, U.S. Soccer hired. I think that that's definitely a hopeful sign. And I think, I think as female players, like this crap's been going on for so long and even, it's upsetting even when you think about sort of as women, you know, it's just the things we've had to endure just to play the game. You really hope that in this case, it does feel like with the amount of eyes on everything going on, I don't think it's going to be able to get swept under the rug. But then you still have the situation like we faced in our situation where, you know, the top of the chain, there's no one that's going to knock them out, right? So even with our situation, the coach is now charged with 9 sex crimes, but the Whitecaps and the Canada Soccer, everybody that was there in 2008 is basically still there now. Again, when you're sort of in the midst of all this, this, it's a little bit exhausting, but I mean, you just hope that, just with the amount of eyes on the situation right now, that they're not going to be able to sweep it under the rug like they normally are able to.
The really grim part about the Paul Reilly story, well, that's probably the wrong phrase. One of the grim elements of the Paul Reilly story was the element of control he had over the careers of these women, that to succeed, they needed to be on good terms with this guy. And I think it's really important that we realise that this is not an isolated incident, that this is a cultural thing, it seems, not just in the NWSL, but any successful women's soccer league, that even from your own perspective, when you played for Vancouver, you make a really good point in that blog post you published in 2019 about how if you wanted to play for the Canada national team, you had to play for the Vancouver Whitecaps. So if you annoyed anybody in the Vancouver Whitecaps, you were screwed, really, in terms of your ambition. And it does seem that there is a similarity between that and the current NWSL story, where the powers that be weaponize young players' ambitions against them.
100%. You said it really well. Weaponize is kind of the word. When I think about it, you know, I think especially when there's not a lot of material reward for playing, you know, people that are hanging in there that long, like, and I can speak for myself with this, you're doing it because you absolutely love it. And like, that's the biggest thing that I felt like in the situation with myself personally was, you know, you've given up everything to be, you know, to all the sacrifice. And again, not that it's even sacrifice, you love the game and you're willing to do whatever. And you have these big high dreams and all this kind of stuff. But that's exactly how it felt for my case where, I did feel like it hit a point where I either had to decide between like my integrity and speaking up and watching this guy, you know, completely abusing his power. And, you know, I was lucky because I had dual citizenship and I knew that I had my Irish passport in my back pocket and I had made contact with Noel King before, who was the manager at the time. And so I knew I had a way out, but, you know, most of those players didn't. And there was plenty of players, again, because the team that was affected, it was the Whitecaps he was the coach of, which was that club team, but also he was under 20 World Cup coach. So like players had given up a year of school. You know, a good friend of mine, she had been on the 2006 under 20 team as an underage player. So, you know, she was, should have been a star, you know, if it was a normal trajectory. And, you know, she ended up quitting soccer over the whole thing. And so, you know, and this is the thing now is that it's, you know, 12 years on. And I mean, I'm still friends with some of the players and, you know, people are in therapy and it's really awful. Like, it's not even like it just stops when they leave soccer. It's literally like the last 12 years, people have been picking up the pieces with what happened in our situation. And so, you know, and it's the same thing, like Sinead Fairley, I played against her. You know, she was a tremendous player and it was the same thing where it was just kind of, she just kind of fizzled out. And, you know, and that's a thing I just, you know, that's what's heartbreaking about it is that it, like, these guys are literally affecting the trajectory of people's careers. And even again, Canada just won the gold in Tokyo, but there's players that, you know, could have been there that were affected with what happened with Bob Berarda, our coach. And so, it's very damaging. And it's not just from a soccer standpoint, it really affects people's lives, you know, and I can speak for myself when I can say that, like, I mean, for my 30s, like it was, I mean, I was a bit of a train wreck and I never really understood why. And then since I posted the blog, it's like the lights shone and everything's gotten so much better. So yeah, there's major consequences on and off the field to these kinds of situations.
Did that help speaking out at the time, like writing that blog post? And like, what are the current, the current players who've spoken out in the Athletic piece going through at the moment?
I mean, I know for me, like the word and I, you know, it is hard to talk about sometimes because, you know, it's, I mean, all I can really say is that it was such a dark time for me, like after it happened. And, you know, and I think part of it as well, like I wasn't one of the quote unquote, you know, victims in the sense that, you know, he didn't sexually harass me, but like my entire career was upended. Like I had to watch, you know, just essentially like emotional violence. You know, I had to watch knowing that he'd been fired for sexual misconduct and we had to see him go back onto the field. And I don't think I ever really appreciated, you know, how hard and again, when we were trying to report it and like the gaslighting where, you know, it's really serious what's happened, but then you're telling all, we've reported over 30 times to like name every possible avenue that we could have reported to that you're supposed to be, you know, you're told that you report to. And so I didn't expect, to be honest, like I was kind of just at my wit's end and I was kind of at rock bottom in my own life when I came forward. And I didn't really have anything to lose in the situation. And so that's for me where I was like, whatever I'm scared of the truth coming out is like, can't be any worse than where I'm at now. And so, yeah, like I said, I it was like a tangible lightness, like after the fact. And so I think that's the one big positive with this, where again, these like poor players, that what they went through and the way that they covered it up. And I'm sure even what they've been sort of trying to, you know, just trying to sort of figure out and just reconcile from their own playing careers. Like, that's the biggest thing that I know from my own experience, like the lightness after, and just how it just really kind of made clear for me how much this affected my life in the decade that this was sort of held in the darkness. So
in terms of what might actually help into the future and what practical things might help, apart from obviously better recruitment and making sure proper vetting is going on so that nobody's ever allowed back into a sport if they've ever had any of these instances in the past. What type of safeguards will help sport get better at this? Because it's not just girls soccer, it's boys soccer, it's actually all underage sports have had issues with this all around the world. And what we're seeing now is hopefully some kind of reckoning and understanding of it. But from your experience, what would have helped you guys when you were coming forward early on in that process?
I mean, I think a big part of it, well, there's a few things. The first, I think, is education. Like, I've always sort of been more on the outspoken side of things. And, you know, I got benched like quite a few times because of sort of, you know, respectfully speaking up. And, you know, I came to find out that that's called neglect and it's a form of abuse. And I had no idea. I just thought it was a consequence of my personality. And so, you know, my friend Eden, that was on the 2006 under 20 team and then quit in 2008 when all this stuff was going on, you know, grooming, right? Like, she knew what she was witnessing was like disgusting, but she didn't have the words or understand what it was, you know? And so I think we have to talk to athletes about, like, you know, just the kind of environment that they should expect. And I think parents also need to understand, like, again, no matter what you can accomplish, you know, in the sport, if your mental health is compromised or your physical health or any type of thing that, you know, compromises your well-being, that it's just not worth it, you know? And then I think just on a practical end for, you know, players in any sport, once they're in the situation, I think, you know, having a safe place to report, because, you know, a lot of, I know with Canada soccer, again, we've all kind of gotten a bit more savvy, but like, they have a whistleblowers hotline, and this is after all this stuff has happened. And it's basically goes straight to the legal counsel, you know, for one of the major soccer associations. So that's not an impartial person that's going to try to, you know, help bring truth to a situation. So I think there needs to be like an outside agency that really is athlete led, and that you know, players can report things, that there's, you know, outside investigations, and that there's support too. Because I think I got really lucky because a friend of mine had skied for the national team in Canada, and there was an awful sexual misconduct case with that. So immediately she put me in touch with the whistleblower with this skiing case. And so I had support the first month after I had, you know, quote unquote, blown the whistle on the situation. And, you know, and I think that's another huge part of it as well. Just people, you know, just having support, just so you don't feel like you're crazy, or, you know, it's just overwhelming sometimes to have the spotlight on you. So I think those four things, I think if they were in place, I think it would be helpful. And then I just honestly think that, like, there needs to be implementation of laws of some sort where, you know, if you get this information and you cover it up, that like there's some kind of consequences for people. Because I think that there's just way too many people that don't do the right thing and you know, enable the abuse to continue. And so I just think there needs to be some sort of mechanism that if they decide to cover it up, that there are consequences for them. And I think that that hopefully would also change people's behavior.
And how much of a factor then, and hopefully this is the end product of all this, is the idea of even just self-worth as a footballer? Because it was mentioned in the Athletic piece that 75% of the players earn under 30 grand a year, and that's in US dollars. And then you've got Alex Morgan, who said that there's been this shared idea that because two leagues failed in the past, the NWSL was kind of the last hope for women's soccer. And I think players maybe married themselves to that idea that they couldn't complain because they didn't want to make the league look bad. And that idea of actually, no, the problem with the league is not the players whatsoever. The league is good because of the players, and the league is bad because of what the coaches have been doing. And it feels that that idea of self-worth is a really, really important step, where it will allow people to create this culture where the behaviour that we've now seen evidenced is just not acceptable whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there's been a lot of really powerful, I think, documentaries and people speaking up. You know, I can speak for myself when I can say, like, I grew up in an era that, like, you watch the Olympics and it was these, like, montages of, you know, reaching the top and you know, striving for your dreams and all that kind of stuff. And so I think that also, you have that ideal and then you're in a reality that, like, is so different to that. I think, you know, with Simone Biles getting out of the Olympics, with the whole Larry Nassar thing with USA Gymnastics and sort of just seeing the damage that was done with that. And Athlete A is a really good documentary that kind of, like, I think sort of shines a clearer light in terms of the realities that go on behind the scenes. And then Michael Phelps in the US, there was another documentary called Weight of Gold. And, you know, again, he is sort of the epitome of what everyone in sports supposedly aspiring towards, with, like, you know, all these Olympic medals. But then he's on this documentary saying how broken he is. So, I mean, I think I do feel like athletes are getting a little bit more empowered. And I think that there's a little bit more reality behind the mental, you know, health aspect of sport. And I think that, you know, that in and of itself, and these really powerful athletes speaking up, and, you know, someone like Simone Biles not competing in the Olympics because it affected her mental health and she just didn't see the value in terms of doing it. I think those things hopefully change a narrative moving forward, and that people realize that, yeah, you know, it is worth, your mental health is what matters the most, and that we do need to start speaking up. And I think especially too, like, what's been really cool to see with the NWSL is just, like, all the players supporting each other. And I think in the past, I know from my own experience, it's almost like survival mentality when you're dealing with these toxic coaches. And so, you know, you have players that turn a blind eye or don't say anything or play into the coach's behavior or whatever. And so, I think and I hope with all this publicity that just that whole narrative starts to change.
In a weird way, Ciara, the ending of the games last week and the suspension of them actually catapulted the story into a crossover element where people were like, hang on a second, what's going on over there? So it was a very good thing, I think, in retrospect that happened, because I know people in advance of it were like, actually, you know what, they should play the games, they should keep going. But sometimes the right thing to do is to call a halt and say, this is too big.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm even experiencing that a little bit on a personal level too, you know, like it's kind of, you know, I guess I've been sort of thrown into the role of, like, a spokesperson with all this sort of stuff. And I feel like a responsibility to, you know, speak up. But I think it's also, it's mentally taxing. You know, I know I'm just speaking on a personal level. It's such dark, ugly subject matter, you know, and I'm, you know, a very happy, optimistic person. And so when you sit in that space for a long time, it's a lot. And I think, and again, on a macro level with what's gone on in the NWSL, I mean, I think absolutely calling the games off on the weekend was the right move, because, like, how do you just go out there and play soccer when, like, this type of stuff has gone on? And so, I definitely think it was a really positive move for sure. And again, I think it's just another example of where I think as athletes, like, we're saying enough is enough. And even as, like, people, we're just, again, where we've always been given this sort of mantra of, like, work hard, plow through things, like, keep going. You know, I think everyone's just getting a little bit smarter to be like, you know what, like, I'm not a machine, and, like, I'm a real person, and this stuff is really heavy and dark, and, like, we all have to take care of ourselves first. And and hopefully when people see that, again, you know, other people sort of support and put athletes' mental health first.
Well, Ciara, we really, really appreciate the effort that it takes to speak about this stuff, and you've been very good with your time this morning. Thanks a million for again sharing that story with us. Cheers.
Yeah, thanks for having me.